Next on RadioSt.Pete.com, Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field.
Welcome back to another episode of Peter's Proffer here in the courtroom of current events. And today we have a very special guest on the show. Attorney Tom is how he's known throughout social media on TikTok, Facebook, YouTube. He is a personal injury lawyer in Texas, the Houston area. His name is Tom Kirker, and he is going to be on the show today to talk about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. We're going to dive into what that looks like in today's day and age, how it affects people, how it's going to be dealt with in the future, and what kind of regulation and laws we can expect to have an effect on social media. And he's a perfect guest for this because he does so much in the realm. So it's going to be an awesome conversation. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. If you'd like to hear any specific content, feel free to reach out to me on social media at Tragos Law, or you can look him up, give him a follow, because he's got a lot of good information out there that he's sharing with people just to be another resource of knowledge. And so you know what your rights are and you know what's going on in the world from the perspective of a lawyer. Attorney Tom is his handle everywhere. So you can look him up. Like I said, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, and just give him a follow as well. So you can just try to use social media to actually learn some knowledge that is from somebody who is educated, who understands what's going on and is giving you a perspective that you can actually trust. So go ahead and give him a follow. Give us a follow out there and let's jump into the episode. All right. We have Attorney Tom with us now. Tom, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Peter.
So we're talking about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. And I think the biggest part of it, we haven't really talked too much about it before the podcast, and we did that on purpose because I want to hear kind of your reactions and what you think of it, how real you think it is, and what you think we can do about it. But I want to start with just kind of the tech addiction. Have you felt it personally, and have you seen it in the world that you live in and work in?
Absolutely. I think tech addiction is very real, and I think it's a problem that people aren't even aware of. And I've certainly experienced it myself, and I've seen it firsthand, whether it be family members, siblings, or even clients. You know.
Yeah, and I think it's really crazy to think about not just social media, which is what we're going to talk a lot about today is social media, but just in general, like one of the guys said he's addicted to email. And I'm one of those guys that never has a one mark on his email. It's always got to be cleared out, moved into the proper files, deleted if I don't need it, saved wherever I do need it. So, you know, I feel that addiction to email, to text messages, to make sure I'm not missing a potential client or a question from a client. And that's really where I feel it. I don't necessarily feel it as much on social media, but I really feel it in the information age. And, you know, that's where I get my news and my sports is from Twitter and on my phone and on my iPad. It's not necessarily the TV anymore like it used to be. So what are some ways we can actually realize this? And what are some things you found interesting in the documentary that were just totally unknown to you?
Well, starting with the documentary, I think the most interesting thing that really stood out to me is sort of the younger generation, how I'm pretty much the cutoff. You know, I'm the younger end of the millennial generation. I grew up not having phones and the, you know, social media. I got Facebook when I was in high school, right? So I went, you know, a huge part of my developmental, you know, pre-adolescence without having social media or without having that pressure that comes with it. So I would consider that somewhat lucky. But this documentary, and I even have a younger sister who's in college now, I definitely see how it just changed how kids have grown up. And the most shocking thing for me, and it makes sense now putting the pieces together, is, you know, 10, 20, 30 years from now, when we have the majority of our society and business culture and every other aspect of life dominated by people who grew up in the social media age, and where your likes and your followers and your online reputation is probably more important than your real life reputation.
it is crazy to think about when you watch the documentary, you see the young girl post the picture, get all excited about the likes, and then somebody makes a comment about her ears, and all of a sudden, boom, that's going to create a lifelong self-consciousness about the way that she looks. And I agree with you. I'm probably about 5 years older than you, and when I was going into college, it was back in the Facebook age where you couldn't have a Facebook unless you had an EDU email address. So I didn't have any of this stuff until I went to college, and it was a way to meet girls and meet friends and see who from my high school went to Florida State and stuff like that. So it was a totally different experience jumping into Facebook and the social media world for me than it is, like you're saying. I mean, I've got a 7-year-old daughter, and we don't let her touch any of this stuff, but there are some of her friends that are already posting pictures and they all know how to take selfies, including her. And I didn't have to teach her how to do that. You know, it's like they learn this stuff so early. And when I watched the documentary, go ahead.
I was about to say, well, the social pressure is just unbelievable, because social media gives you something that you can quantify in the realm of likes or views or hearts or whatever it may be. And you see, I've certainly seen it with people very close to me. I would probably get in trouble if I named them by names, but I have seen people just distraught that they have posted a photo and it's only gotten 50 likes on Instagram.
Sure.
Or 100 likes on Instagram, whatever their benchmark is. And if they don't hit it, it's a huge failure, and they feel embarrassed. They feel unloved. They feel that their community has not only, it's not that the community might not have not seen it for whatever reason. Maybe that everybody was at dinner at the time the photo was posted, and therefore it got gobbled up by the feed. By the time they ended up checking, nobody just ended up seeing it. They don't think that. They think that everybody has seen it. They have actively judged the photo.
Yep.
And have consciously decided to not give out likes or...
Yeah, they now feel some type of way about the people that they're friends with on those social media platforms.
Right.
Yeah, they're angry at them now. And to me, I watch this and I think of myself, when I self-reflect on it, I don't have a lot of this care about, likes and whatever, and my confidence doesn't come from social media. But when you start to think of it from, like you said, the biggest and most concerning part of this is the generation that grew up on it, and that's how they get their confidence. That's where they find their value. That's where they find their purpose. That's where the real problematic nature of this documentary comes in. Because again, our generation, I'll say, or even above mine, they don't see it the same way. I mean, some of them are falling into it for sure. You can see some of the older crowd on Facebook is starting to fall into it and learning this behavior pretty easily, because they're, I guess, manipulating all of us. But the younger generation is the one where this is what they're growing up on. That's concerning.
Right. And I would say, as someone who has a fairly large social media following, I've roughly, maybe 650,000 followers across all channels.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned that it's very counterintuitive that if you want to have a successful social media or grow a following or get lots of likes or views or whatever it is that you're looking for, you can't think about, you have to make content that is purposely bad sometimes. You have to make things that are purposely off-brand. I find that the silly videos or the posts that might not be as serious or professionally edited or whatever it does, they help you a whole lot more. Because at the end of the day, social media, the consumers are so used to seeing perfect fit photos, perfect videos, perfect this, perfect that, and it kind of gets boring. They want to see, my recommendation for people who want to grow on social media is they want to see vulnerability, and you just have to be strong enough to push through that. And so I would represent that. Getting 50 likes on a very vulnerable photo or message or whatever is worth 5 times more than getting 200 likes on a bikini pic that's you spent 4 hours editing and, you know.
So you go counterintuitive, basically. You go, it's not necessarily what everybody's flooding social media with, but you kind of go the opposite because there are movements like this. I didn't write it down, but the Humane Technology or whatever that organization was that they founded to try to push out social media in a humane way that's not creating addiction and things like that, where you actually are posting real things. You kind of get back down to what social media was supposed to be for, where you can find information easily. That's what's so great about Google. You're supposed to be able to find info easily, but now they're just catering it towards what they want you to read or what they think you want to read and creating this divisiveness. So when you talk about social media, so we both do a lot of things on social media. Your following is a billion times bigger and larger than mine and more influential than mine. So my question to you would be, do you take into account any of the things that this documentary was talking about? Do you try to manipulate any of your users? And I don't want this to seem in a negative light because, you know, throughout the documentary, they're saying, listen, it's a business. They're trying to make money. And part of that is manipulation. Is it right? Is it wrong? We'll talk about that later. But from your perspective, for somebody that does use it, you know, you post fun videos, but you also post some business videos and some business generation videos, which is what I use it for too. Business generation, you know, we want to give information to people from a lawyer's perspective or from a lawyer's brain and how this works so people can know their rights and understand that what's going on might not be fair, might not be normal. What goes into your thought process when you make content for people to consume?
Right. Absolutely. That's kind of a complicated question. I would say that there's multiple facets to that. At a 50,000 foot view, I absolutely, you know, started my social media journey as, you know, I branded myself as Attorney Tom. I want people to think of me as a lawyer. There's, you know, I really don't like the word manipulation, right? But
sure.
But you do want to be thought of as an authority in whatever space that you're going into, right? For us, it's law. I want people to think of, oh, Attorney Tom, he's, you know, 10 years from now, I want people to think, oh, Attorney Tom, he's been around forever. He's got a huge following. He is the authority figure. And, starting out my career, I started my own law firm straight out of law school, and you don't really have that many choices when you don't have that much capital, right? I couldn't go buy TV ads, but what I could do is sit in front of a camera and make YouTube videos, right? So I kind of worked with what I had, and as we talked about earlier, I think social media is only going to get more and more influential or important in people's lives as the younger generation who grew up on it starts to become the mainstay of the economy. And, you know, once that happens, I'm optimistic that people who have positioned themselves well on social media have kind of gamed the system a little bit. You know, you'll have a first mover's advantage, or you'll already be thought of the authority figure. So when the, you know, 10 years from now, when the, when the social media user gets into a car wreck, or they need a merger and acquisition lawyer, or they need a criminal defense lawyer, they're going to think, oh, here's this guy I followed on social media for the past 5 years or 6 years or whatever it be. So, I definitely think that there is some form of a benefit of being on social media. And again, manipulation really isn't the right word, but just establishing yourself as an authority.
Right, and I think what I meant by manipulation, I think that, which I don't think you do, because I follow Tom's pages and videos and stuff, and what I mean by manipulation is doing things or saying things to entice people to stay on your page and make decisions that they wouldn't necessarily make otherwise. And I don't think that's necessarily what you do. I think what you're doing is you want to be the guy they go to when they need something that you're going to do a video on. You're not trying to come up with content that's going to make them need you. You know, you're not doing a video that's going to make them go get in a car accident so that they can then hire you and have some catastrophic injury. You know, that's kind of what this documentary was getting at, is it's like they want these people to be so addicted that they get rid of time with family so they can spend more time and get them more money on their Facebook ads and whatever. They want them to not have any friends. They want them to focus on this. I think what we do, if I can say it that way, is we're just providing information. Like, the original great thing about Google and Facebook and whatever is you could just easily get information. You could see where people were going to college. You could see, you know, who the 21st president of the United States was by Googling it, you know, just that type of stuff. So if somebody has a question like, I got in a car accident, or I know you did some Roundup videos, like, hey, I have a family member who just died and they were, you know, using Roundup for 25 years. You can find out a ton of information from our videos and our pages based on that. And if you stick around to watch some of the funny videos where, you know, you react to a TikTok video or whatever as a lawyer, then great. And you can have some enjoyment. And that's the other benefit of social media, is it's supposed to be enjoyable. But I think it's kind of lost its way by trying to put out content that creates an addiction and creates something where there's a need and you get rid of good things in your life in order to focus in on social media, which kind of leads me into my next question for you. Have you noticed, and again, I know you're a little bit younger than me, but have you noticed that from when you were even in middle school, high school, and college versus right now, how many more people in the world are anti-vaccine, more diets, crazy about politics and divisive, 9/11 conspiracies, IKEA furniture is actually human trafficking, Pizzagate. Have you noticed more of that? Because I certainly have over the last 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's given, you know, it's exactly what you said. People can really go down the rabbit hole. You know, if you watch one video on YouTube about it, you'll get recommended more and more and more and more. And then you kind of get into this fringe area that you've completely lost touch with reality. And these people who you almost feel bad for them.
Absolutely. Right? 100%. They're just getting filled with this stuff by some random woman or man who's sitting on their couch telling them, this is absolutely true. You need to watch this video and that video, which all are obviously going to agree with their point of view.
Right. And at some level, do we even think the creator of the video is at fault? I mean, what if the creator of the video is just a total nut job as well, but it's the YouTube algorithm pushing this narrative on them because it determines that it's going to keep them on the platform longer, right?
Absolutely. So, it's a combo. And that's the point about what we do, right? Bringing it back to, and let's focus on what you do, because you have a ton of followers on YouTube and TikTok specifically. And you're not making a video explaining why 9/11 didn't happen or did happen, or why, you know, this surgery is better than that surgery, or something that you just have no experience in. Most of your stuff is lawyer reacts, or lawyer explains this, or let me explain the exhibits at a trial. You know, you're focusing on, and I always try to focus on, what can a lawyer add to this information? But that's not what we're seeing with all of these conspiracies that totally normal people are buying. That's the most different thing. Is like, back in the day, it'd be like some crazy person that was very obviously, you know, had a mental disorder or something, believed this, and everybody was like, oh man. But now it's totally normal, totally educated people that are buying in to all of these conspiracy theories as if they are absolutely true, and they make it their life's mission to convince other people.
Right, and they have a platform to do that on.
Yeah.
Whereas before, you could have just, you know, if you had a conspiracy theorist, they'd have to go shout at the college square or whatever, and people could just walk by them. But if you have a
and that seems a lot more crazy than somebody that makes a YouTube video.
Right. And especially if you have a YouTube algorithm that will place your video in front of people who are susceptible to that message.
Exactly.
Right. And what a good example where maybe even I come in to that or good intent, goodwill content creators is, you know, the algorithms, if it's there to keep you on longer, it could pepper in real videos with fake videos. So you're consuming them one after the other and you kind of lose your dilution of reality, right?
Yep.
You're kind of, you know, you see one video that's real, and then you see one video that's fake, but they look the same. The two people talk with the same authority, and you can just assume, you consume everything as truth, and then you get mixed up with it. And I certainly experienced that firsthand when I talk about real life legal issues on my channel. You always see, you know, conspiracy theorists, nut jobs, whatever have you, in the comment section telling me how wrong I am because of XYZ or
my uncle's a lawyer. My uncle's brother's a lawyer in Oregon, and he said you're wrong. And I love that stuff. And it's just, yeah. And that's the point, is lawyers are famous for leaving openings, right? Because we realize things can change. Things can be different depending on the state or even county or country that you're in. And we just give opinions on things that we think can answer what we call lay people. It just means not a lawyer. It doesn't mean that you're not smart. But what we think lay people want to know, and questions that we've heard over and over again. And it's the exact same thing as screaming in the town square, as opposed to us telling one person at a time. We can do it on a video or do it on a social media post where hundreds, or in your case, hundreds of thousands of people can watch it and listen it to it and learn. And that's beneficial for the general public. It's beneficial for them to hear us talk about topics like this, especially when we're going to get into the legality of what's going on behind closed doors.
Right.
So when we talk about this, why, and I'll let's get to this before we get to regulation, but do you think it has something to do with how divisive politically the country is today versus 20 years ago?
Yes, absolutely. I think people can consume what they want to hear, or more specifically, maybe what the algorithm wants them to hear.
It creates an echo chamber.
Right, it creates an echo chamber, and when you have sources or content creators that are very good at producing content, but their facts and representations are just false or half-truths, which are even more dangerous, right? Because, you know, you can spin something where that might be real, but the way they spin it is deceitful or just misleading. You create just an echo chamber. And then on top of that, if you have people more addicted to social media than ever, so they're not going out and socializing and confronting and having philosophical debates in person with their friends and family, you know, nobody can rebut them. So they just, their opinions grow stronger the more they stare at the screen.
And they honestly cannot believe how anyone else could have any other opinion, because all 5,000 people they follow on Facebook think exactly the same way they do and read the same articles and watch the same videos that they do. They can't believe that people don't see things the same way that they do, because they're only seeing one-sided videos and posts and things over and over and over and over again every single day.
Right. And I would even go to say, as even if you do see somebody who you're objectively wrong, or who you think is objectively wrong on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or whatever, you're not going to go engage them 99 times out of 100. You know, I scroll through Facebook every now and then, and I see a conspiracy theory post, and I'm not going to go dedicate my next 3 hours of my life to having a Facebook debate with this person. I'm just going to scroll past the video.
Well, yeah, you say that. You say that, but that's because you're sane. You see these people on Facebook that do that, and that's exactly the problem. So it's a problem from both ends. They don't have level-headed people having these conversations. Instead, it's two people that want to bite each other's heads off, and you have the perfect platform to be as tough, as nasty, and as mean as you want to, because there are no real-life repercussions for what you're going to scream at each other on Facebook.
Right.
That's the problem. You know, and that's the exact problem we're dealing with today. And how many times, as a lawyer, as a trial lawyer, as a personal injury trial lawyer suing big companies and insurance companies and people that all they care about is money, is who we sue, basically, how many times have you heard profits over people?
Yeah, all the time.
That's what we always say, because it's always true in these big companies. And what I can't remember what the documentary said exactly, but these tech companies, Facebook, Google, Instagram, whatever, are the biggest, wealthiest, fastest growing companies of all time in the history of the world. And the only way you get that is to put profits over people. They want us fighting. They want us being divisive. They want us to be split so far at each side of the right and the left to be so far from each other, because that sticks us on for a three-hour argument. We're seeing all these ads. We're seeing all the videos from whatever politician we like, and we're stuck on Facebook, and we live there. And that's what they want, because they make more money off of it, right? Would you agree with that? I mean, it's obvious. They're doing it for money. People need to understand that. We're being manipulated. We are the product, like they say. We are users. And I thought that was a great quote, that only in illegal drugs and social media do they call their people users, you know? And that's what we are. We are users because we're addicted to this. So that brings me really to censorship and regulation. What does it look like currently as far as the censorship that happens online and on social media? Do you think there is censorship, and who's doing it?
So there's very, very basic censorship online, and it generally doesn't revolve around the marketplace of ideas. It's more specifically with respect to violence. Like, for instance, every now and then, one of my videos will get flagged because of a popular segment that I do on my social medias is all objectively analyze a car crash, right?
Right.
If you've ever seen car crash videos, you can get some pretty dicey situations, you know, especially when what the public really likes to learn is the theory of contributory negligence and how things just can't be, you know, oh, this is 100% her fault or 100% his fault. It's a scale, right? It's you know, this person can be 30% at fault. This person can be 40% at fault. And, you know, so that's a popular segment that I do. And we'll go and we'll watch car crash footage. And, you know, I'll oftentimes leave it up to the chat or whoever's watching. I'll say, okay, give me your thoughts. You know, it's like I'm picking a jury or you know, or just picking the brains of the public. Okay, if you're on a jury, who do you say is at fault here or why? And you get some really interesting opinions. It's actually a great Vore Dyer exercise.
That sounds really interesting. It sounds like you can learn a lot from that.
Yeah, but where I was getting with that is every now and then, for a reason I can't figure out, these aren't different than any other videos, but I'll play a car crash and it will get flagged or taken down because it's violent. I don't show any videos where individuals, you know, you see individuals actually getting hurt.
Right.
But some of the, you know, I don't show bodies, I don't show blood, you know, or screaming or anything like that. It's just the accident happens and then the video cuts off. And then, you know, most of the time, I would say 95% of the time, there's no issue with that. But every now and then, you know, I'll play a car accident crash and the video will get flagged and taken down for you know, dangerous content or violence or whatever you have. So there is some level of censorship, and I've been lucky enough to meet some bigger creators, content creators, social media influencers, and, you know, they often talk about how if they talk about certain subjects that their videos don't do as well or what have you.
Well, there's supposedly a cursing thing on YouTube where it doesn't do as well if there's cursing in it, I heard, or I've read about, and...
Right. So that's maybe a little bit of a de facto censorship, right? And the cursing thing would probably be advertisers don't want to put ads in front of videos that aren't family-friendly.
Right.
Or how, you know, so if they can't make money, why would they promote it? So even though they're not censoring it, and I think this is where the conversation is going to go, which is the tricky situation. What is censorship, where the video is still alive, but the algorithm isn't pushing it to people? And what I mean by that is, let's say every time I post a video, I get regularly 100,000 views or 1 million views or whatever it is. And I post a video that is off-brand, maybe talking about a real-life issue, like a famine that's occurring somewhere in the world, or political dissent, or, you know, the issue with the Uyghurs in China, and that video doesn't get taken down, but for some odd reason, it only gets 200 views, whereas all my other silly videos get 100,000 views or 1 million views. You know, and so technically the video is still up. Anybody can go see it. I wouldn't, you know, it's not censored per se, but if the algorithm refuses to push it out to people, is that censorship, right? And then you get the other side of the coin where you get videos that they just get pushed to tens of millions of people where the person doesn't have any viewers or any subscribers.
Right, and I don't know if – I don't necessarily know if you call that censorship, but that's absolutely what's already happening. So people know that whether you call it regulation or censorship or whatever, it's being manipulated. It's being controlled.
Right.
The algorithm chooses certain videos that they push and other videos that they hide, I'll say, and they're doing it for their benefit, not for the user's benefit, you know, not for
right.
us, not for the consumers, not for the people watching the videos. They're doing it for their advertisers, the people that are actually paying for, and I thought it was interesting in the video, they're like, all this stuff is free, right? It's free to us, quote unquote. Well, no, advertisers are paying for us to be able to use Facebook and YouTube and TikTok. That's why it's free. That's why these geniuses in Silicon Valley come up with these tech ideas, because they want to monetize them in ways that we don't have to pay for them, because they know we're not going to pay for all of them. There's too many free options. I'm not going to pay $10 a month to use Facebook, but Gillette Razor will pay $1 million to have a ad come up on my screen so that I can use it for free. And that's the whole point of everything, is it is absolutely being manipulated and censored by, I'll say, the companies, by Google, by Facebook, by YouTube. They are censoring it and manipulating it based on the algorithm. Do you think that is the way it should be?
No, I don't.
Okay, how should it be? What would be a better way to handle this?
Well, so, and that this is kind of the crux of the video, right? Of the social dilemma.
Right.
There's no real answer, because we clearly are getting manipulated. It is a free product, and nothing is free, right? There's no such thing as a free lunch. And, you know, how do you go about getting, and to be honest, this is not an original idea. I actually just learned about it from the documentary, but they were talking about having a data collection tax, right? Meaning every piece of data these companies collect, the more expensive it becomes. Presumably these companies would then decrease the amount of data they have if they have less data.
As opposed to gathering everything, every single thing about us, they'll pick and choose what. Because let me ask you this question. I don't want to go too far off topic. Does it bother you if you're looking for a watch and certain watches start popping up on your Facebook? Because that doesn't really bother me if I'm looking for a watch. You know, that doesn't really bother me.
Right. And I would agree with you on that. You know, personalized ads, sometimes it helps.
Right. But we know that they're also keeping track of what photos I like and what people I look at and whose names I search and how long I stay on, and just all this stuff that they don't necessarily need to be gathering. And if there was a tax, maybe they wouldn't.
Right. And presumably if the less data they have, the more manipulative their algorithms could be.
Exactly.
Right? So, I definitely think something needs to be done, but they come into a weird situation, or they can hide behind a very weird, or it's not weird, they can hide behind the defense of free speech, right?
Right.
Because, you know, that whack job who creates all these conspiracy videos has a right to say what they say, right? They have the right of free speech, but they don't have the right to be heard by tens of millions of people or whatever it is. So you have to regulate it in a way that is objective, or
which would be the problem with governmental regulation.
Right, because you cannot come out and pass a law that says all videos relating to conspiracy theories must be killed by the algorithm.
Right.
Or are not uploaded, because that would not...
That's un-American.
Right. You'd get slaughtered in court. It would never pass, right? It would never... because then it's up for somebody to determine what is and isn't a conspiracy theory. But you... So it would regulation needs to be done, but it needs to be done in a non-speech related way. And I guess you have to go after their pockets, their money.
And here's the other issue with different kinds of regulation, because this it borderlines on false advertisement when they say, you know, we promote free thought and free speech, and we just want you to hear what people are saying. That's great, and I think that's fine. And if that's how it was, and people are doing these conspiracy theories, fine. And if people want to watch and listen, fine. But what they're doing is, like what you've already said multiple times, is the algorithm is pushing this stuff in certain people that are more susceptible. It's pushing it in their face so that they have to watch it, and they continue to watch it over and over again, and they share it, and they send it with people. They're creating what people are watching and hiding what they don't want people to watch. So it's not free thought, and it's not free speech. But the problem is, we all as a society do it willfully. We are willfully ignorant. We will check any box that says I agree without reading what it is. How many times have you had somebody say, oh, I signed that, but I didn't read it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how people do this, and they just check the I agree box, me included. I don't know what the last Facebook I agree box said that I'm sure I clicked. You know, so we willfully do and allow them to get all this information. We allow them to put what they want in front of us and hide what they don't want us to see. So how do you get around a society that doesn't care, that would sacrifice everything in order to be cool on social media?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Right. I wish I had the answer for you.
And I think one of the answers is, as anything, just bring awareness to it. Just people pay attention to what's in front of you. You know, look with an eye that might be a little more skeptical than you usually do. Realize what they're doing. I'm not saying, you know, you got to cancel Facebook or cancel social media or whatever, but just understand what's happening. I think that can help. Understand that this stuff is being manipulated, and don't get depressed when you only get 50 likes or whatever you were talking about in the beginning. Like, don't let that stuff affect you, because there are so many other factors that go into that than just people like you or think that you're attractive or whatever it may be, or think the vacation you're on is cool. I think awareness is really the only way to combat it.
Right. Right. And it's just it's a all-consuming ecosystem, right? I mean, you know, let's just say somebody averages 50 likes, and then they create something that it isn't necessarily conspiracy theory, full-on conspiracy theorist, but it's maybe kind of bordering on the edge. They don't know what's going on, or they don't know what they're talking about. Then they get 100 likes. So then they take their stance one
exactly.
step further in the next video.
You're right.
They get 500 likes. And then next thing you know, you're full-blown millions of followers, but your stance is just so out there, and it's really not your genuine stance. You've developed this because it's what the people want to hear.
And it's funny, I've had people tell me before that listen to the podcast or watch my YouTube videos, and they say, you know, the reason you only have a couple thousand people that ever watch this or listen to this is because you're too respectful of the other side or whatever you don't agree with. If you were more divisive and a little more, you know, in it and just threw it up against the wall and let whatever happen, I think a lot more people would listen and watch. I mean, look at Tucker Carlson and you know, whatever, everybody that hates him or loves him or whatever it is. It's like, yeah, I'm not interested in that though. Like, so I think that's kind of prong number two, is awareness that this is going on, but also as somebody that's creating content, which, I mean, so many people these days are creating content, whether they have 10 followers or whether they have 10 million, they're creating content. So I think responsibly creating content, as you said before, at some point, the creator of the video has to have some liability in all of this. And I think that as creators of content, we need to be respectful, we need to be responsible, and we need to understand the effect that this can have to the 10 or 100 or 1,000 or million people that may one day see, hear, read, or listen to this.
Right. And more so than that, I would say as people who, especially for people who want to create content as a career or to make money off of it, I've been lucky enough to where, and maybe this is why you and I or there's, you know, a bazillion fantastic content creators that I could name have been very fortunate with this, is I don't create content for a living.
Exactly.
Right? My way of earning a living is the practice of law.
Right.
And I create content to one, because sometimes I legitimately enjoy making it. I think it's fun. I think it's an outlet.
For sure.
Two, you know, it does help the practice of law, right? It does, you know, it does.
Right, case generation.
Right, case generation and just trust. You know, it builds your credibility with the public, especially in an age that is just going to become more increasingly social media dependent. They legitimately might think that my lawyer's skills are better because I have 600,000 followers.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And even though that has nothing to do, you know, do with it, but that very well might be the case. And
but there has to be good content too. There's so much content. Right, there has to be good content too.
Of course. But where I was getting with that is because I've been in the content creation community, I've got to meet a lot of great creators. I've met creators who are like me, who have other sources of revenue. But I also know creators who make content to make a living. And they depend on the views and the likes and the sponsorships. And I've heard and I've seen that I've seen social media creators with tens of millions of followers put a shirt up for sale and then only get 5 or 6 sales, you know? And so I would take a word of caution towards to the public or to anybody who's interested in developing the career of content creation, is that even though it's slower, even though it's going to be more painstaking and you're not going to get all the love and attention, building an audience the right way with credible videos and credible facts and credible just methodologies is worth so much more than building a huge audience based on lies and deceit or no substance. So, you know, do you follow Gary Vaynerchuk?
I do not.
Okay, Gary Vee is a very successful businessman. He's more or less a motivational speaker. He's a great guy. I love him. I've never met him, but he's always very positive. Talks about the pitfalls and he works with all these huge influencers and you know all this great stuff. Gives them coaching advice and you know he has a $100 million plus ad agency, employs over 100 people. He's just a very successful guy.
Mm-hmm.
He has a podcast and he brought in a woman who has about 5 or 6 million followers on Instagram, and she got it very quick, and she got them because she's a very attractive woman, and she would let the whole world know that, if you know what I'm saying. Like, all her photos right. were very risque,
yeah,
and just, you know, she built this huge following, but that following is not built for conversions. So, and that's the example I was saying where she put up a t-shirt and nobody would buy it, right? So I would rather take somebody who has 500,000 followers or 10,000 followers, but they are real followers, they're real listeners, they're real, you know, they know your middle name, they know your favorite food, they know everything about the content creator, rather than having somebody with 5 million followers and it's just shallow likes and it's not real opportunity.
Sure.
So I think that even from the business side, from the content creation side, you see a lot of people chasing likes, but then they haven't realized yet, either because the industry is too young or maybe they're too young and they're still living, you know, with their parents, or they're still in school and they don't have to face the real world yet, is that likes aren't everything. And likes aren't going to put food on your family's table.
Right.
So,
and
it's very short-sighted.
No, I agree. And I think that basically, to wrap it up, the two things, it's got to be a change in mindset. It's got to be a change in mindset as the consumer and as the producer. And just like, you know, the bigger things that are going on in the world today, it's not going to be a light switch. It has to be, over time, changing the way people think and act. And I think that's the only way we really fix this social dilemma. So, Tom, thanks so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate it. Everyone go give him a follow at Attorney Tom. good content out there, and we appreciate you coming on, man.
You've been listening to Peter's Proffer with Clearwater attorney Peter Tragos. The experienced lawyers at Tragos, Sartes, and Tragos discuss common legal questions, providing insight into the legal process and covering current events as they relate to the legal field. Find out more at TragosLaw.com.